You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Embracing Change, where we have conversations about digital transformation with people from different industries. And today, my guest is Matt Morris, Head of Strategy at Hopeware. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much. Thanks for being with us. I know that you're based out of Nashville, one of my favorite towns.
Yeah, that's right. No shortage of fun here.
No shortage of fun. Absolutely. Listen, before we start our conversation, I always like to ask my guests to do a very quick introduction about themselves and what you guys do.
So, gosh, I've been in this space for, I don't know, close to 20 years now. Really, I recently graduated from college, and college is what brought me to Nashville. So I attended Dahlman University here and graduated in 2003, had high hopes and aspirations of being some bigwig music producer. And those faded after about 3 years, and ended up landing at a place called Lifeway Christian Resources. You guys may be familiar with that. It's the largest denominational publisher in the world, and it's the entity of the Southern Baptist Convention, and spent 12 years there and had four different roles. And that was kind of my foray into nonprofit, and I really love, you know, the time there, and loved my time in the nonprofit space, in the ministry space. And so that's where I've chosen to. Today I serve as head of strategy at a company called Hopeware, headquartered out of Atlanta, Georgia, which is where I grew up, but I don't live there anymore. I don't know if I can ever move back just because of the traffic, but.
Which is where I'm based, by the way. So right. There's a connection
there. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And Hopeware is a strategy for Frolic Lab. And that's our way of saying we build things. We build solutions, we build platforms, we build software application, mobile application. But we do it through a strategic lens. So many times people come to us and say, I have an idea for something. And our goal is to help them fluff that out and really find a roadmap or a plan or a blueprint. For them to have the most clear picture possible before we even start building anything, if we start building anything. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes what we see is through the strategy that we do, through the assessments that we do for the client, oftentimes they don't end up building anything because it's just not different enough than what's currently on the market. Or they can't scale it the way that they want to because of pricing. And so I would say 90% of the time, we're mainly focused on the strategic elements and could lead to, you know, product development, but it doesn't always do that.
So the topic of the conversation today is about the how mission-driven organizations are embracing change, you know, with all of these different digital, not only platforms, but the trends, right? All of those have impacted mission-driven organizations, no? which is I know where you've spent most of your career. So I would like to start talking about market trends and challenges in mission-driven organizations, right? What are some of the most unique challenges that those type of organizations, especially in the not-for-profit sector, face today, you would say?
Yeah, you know, I think COVID opened a lot of people's eyes to the lack of technology that they really have. I look at the church space specifically, and gosh, I think it was 2010, 2011, when I was at Lifeway, we commissioned a research study about trends in online giving. And at that point, I think it was like 18% of churches actually offered some kind of means for their members to be able to tithe online. And one of the shocking stats that really jumped out to me was one of the last questions. It's like, if you do not offer online giving today, do you have any plans to offer it in the future? And we gave a timeline, right? Like 0 to 1 year, 1 to 3 year, 3 to 5 years, 5 to 10 years, and then never. And over 60% of the respondents said never. And that was very eye-opening to me. But now, you know, you fast forward 13 years or 10 years, right, when COVID hit in 2020. And now it seems like most every church has adopted online giving. And it's really because they were forced to, right? When you close your doors and you can't physically meet on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night or a Wednesday night due to a global pandemic, it really forces you to change the way that you collect tithes and offerings. And we saw the same thing in the nonprofit space. So, you know, companies like the American Red Cross or Compassion International, or you name it, how often, you know, have kind of the traditional means of raising money been, you know, direct mail, with a compelling story about how your gift makes an impact to an individual's life. And now, you know, those companies are leveraging social media to drive people to landing pages to donate. And those were some of the early adopters. Churches were really the late adopters. But there are some nonprofits that, you know, still do things the old school way. I mean, I look at it like trying to turn around the Titanic, and you can't just throw a deck chair off the Titanic from sinking, right? You have to make radical changes. And most oftentimes that's led by the consumer and not the company. When in reality, it should be the opposite, right? It should be led by the company. The company should be proactive instead of reactive. But, you know, it's been my experience in the nonprofit space that a majority of the time, the nonprofits are being reactive and not proactive. And the change has really been led by, you know, their donors or their consumers.
So we talked about being able to generate and continue generating revenue, but what about, you know, in an increasingly interconnected world, right? How has the ability of mission-driven organizations to identify and serve their target audience changed? So beyond being able to collect, but being able to serve, you know, how has that changed?
Yeah, I just think as technology further iterates, and, you know, now we're on the precipice of AI and everybody's kind of on the AI bandwagon. You know, we're working on a project right now that leverages AI to be able to automate positioning clinician notes on in a clinical setting. And so, you know, you think about like traditional workflows of, you know, Gerardo comes in to see Matt and he's a patient, and Matt, you know, analyzes the situation and takes a bunch of notes, whether that's, you know, physically scribbling on a notepad or annotating that in a voice recorder, and then being able to type that into some kind of EHR platform. Well, AI can you know, basically do all that, right? So if you're transcribing those notes through some kind of AI plugin, that can then flow directly to the patient record through natural language processing. Like, that's just one example of how technology can like further refine and advance kind of the mission of some of these organizations. But I think what we're seeing across, you know, nonprofit, church, ministry, what I would find as mission centric or mission minded organization, is there's more technology now than ever, right? I think the challenge is how those technology applications talk to each other, how they integrate with one another. What's the play there, right? There are no single ecosystems that exist today. So what you find is organizations that use 5, 6, 7, 10 different solutions to accomplish a task, when in reality, all of that could be integrated with one another. And there are integrated solutions like giving integrates to, you know, different management platforms and websites and things like that. But I'm talking about, you know, a single ecosystem or environment, and that just doesn't exist today. So I think that as we see technology continue to make a push in the future, we'll start to see companies kind of embrace that you know, single ecosystem idea to make it a lot easier for mm-hmm. for not just their clients, but also their clients' clients. So it's kind of a B2B2C model.
So how would, so, I mean, I think we're establishing that digital transformation, it's pretty important for mission-driven organizations, almost the same way that it's important for non-mission-driven organizations. I mean, it's just the new way of interacting with your audience.
Right. The difference is budget constraints, right? At nonprofits, I think that's a huge thing, right? So you'll see software companies that will offer nonprofit rates, and that's often at a steep discount to what they charge, you know, secular companies. And so the goal there would be obviously to help out the nonprofits and just knowing that they're operating on shoestring budgets. And so when you kind of have that in mind, in terms of nonprofits or mission-centric organizations, I think the goal from a platform standpoint should be, how can we help these guys accomplish what needs to be accomplished, knowing and strength that they have?
Budget being the, you know, the most important constraint.
Correct.
Obviously. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And how much of that is an issue of actual budget or an issue of the KPIs they're measuring? Let me explain my question. So sometimes they might have the budget, but they might not see them. For example, if you're running an e-commerce or a for-profit, right? Or a, you know, the KPI is more transactions, right? Because more transactions, you're trying to improve your conversion because you're trying to make more money. In a mission-driven organization, you might want to improve transactions, but there's not a monetary value to it, right? So therefore, there's not a budget allocation for that. But, you know, is there a way of reframing that, or is that reframed in a way of, you need to make this investment because you're being able to serve more people?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely spot on. I think the efficiencies and the way that organizations can be more effective through technology is no doubt. Like there's no doubt efficiencies and scale there. I think a lot of them are reticent to do that only because of the budget constraints. They don't know what they don't know. And so that's what I do every day, right? I help organizations that are in this space really fully understand and comprehend that they can accomplish what they want to accomplish, even, you know, amidst those budget constraints. Because, you know, they may go to a firm and the firm would say, well, in order to build something like this, it's going to cost $2 billion. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea what really needs to be built. Right. They may have scrapped the service, but my goal is to say, let's not worry about building anything right now. Let's not worry about spending $2 million. Let's look at this and see what's currently on the market. Like what kind of products are currently on the market? Let's look at how, what you're thinking about differentiates from that. Is there enough of a value prop there? And then let's put a blueprint together. Like if you're going to build a house, Gerardo, you can't just go to a builder and point to a house across the street and say, I want you to build me that house.
Yeah.
I mean, from the outside, he could probably do a very, very good job, but the guts on the inside, you have no idea what that looks like. So our goal at Hopeware is to be able to do those blueprints and build that roadmap. So the clients that we serve that are in this space know exactly what to expect. They're not going to be wasting a ton of time, energy, effort, and money. I tell this story sometimes when I'm talking to folks, and I used to work for an organization, and we built a platform, and we took up, it took us about three years to build it, and depending on who you asked, it took somewhere between $12 and $15 million. The reality is that should have taken no more than a year and about $1 million to build. So if we back up prior to the build phase and we just look at the market and we validate the product and we look at the differentiators and we're able to establish that there is a valid reason to build something based on what the market tells us, based on what the research tells us, then we can flush out all of the mistakes or most of the mistakes from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, we have a very clear picture of what is going to be built and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think as long as we're able to look at, I say we, like the nonprofit space, the mission driven organization, as long as we're able to look at what needs to be accomplished through a strategic lens, as opposed to just starting on building something right away,
mm-hmm.
then it does save a lot of time and money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. We see that with the for-profit clients as well as not-for-profit clients. I mean, well, the work that we tend to do, we work with not-for-profit, but we're not specializing in not-for-profits. We do a lot of for-profit work. And that stage, which is basically a stop and think, let us just take a couple of steps back. Let's write a blueprint. Let's understand what's out there, what type of demand exists, and you know, what is it that you can accomplish, right? You have a hypothesis of what you want to build. Let's make sure that there is a market for it.
That's right.
That work, I always tell my client, let's spend 5% of your budget making sure that you're not wasting 95% of your budget.
That's it.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. So, I think it's important to get it right from the very beginning. And that influences everything else. It's a domino effect.
Yeah.
Right? And so that first domino falls in the direction that it should, it's going to knock a bunch of other dominoes over that don't need to be knocked over. And so I think looking at it through that lens is highly important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you share a case study or an example where digital transformation has significantly helped a mission-driven organization? Something, it doesn't have to be an example of a project you've worked on, but probably an example of the market.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most familiar one for me would be like church management software. And I say that because I spent so much of my career there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still evolving and changing. And there are totally companies in the space that do what they do very well. And even in those, you know, call it 40-ish companies, even though most of them do somewhat the same thing, the way the customers that they have are somewhat different. So, you know, whether that's, you know, more watered down, models or lower pricing, you know, we saw a company come on the scene several years ago and completely disrupted the pricing models, kind of the traditional status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, like Fellowship One back in the day, started pricing based on total worth of attendance. And then Breeze comes on the market and they're at $50 regardless of the size of your church. So you have small churches that are using them, but you also have large churches that are using them and they're only paying $50. And so that was pretty disruptive.
I can imagine, of course.
Yeah. And, but you know, the point there is in 1978, when ACS Technologies came to the market, and they're still a large legacy player and have a very established customer base. When they came to market, it was really them and Shelby Systems for a long time, you know, for several years. And mm-hmm. now we have more competition than ever. Even amongst companies like Ministry Brands that have been, you know, they've rolled up several different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But there are enough points of differentiation between kind of these 40, right? They're probably 25 or 30 that really do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's a dozen or so that really focus on subsets of the market. So multi-site and megachurch would be one, like Ministry Platform. But for the most part, the way that they've all adapted and the way that they've all grown is through integration.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of building additional solutions and spending their time and money to do it, they'll find companies to integrate with, whether that's giving or mobile apps or content management, you know, via websites or financial mm-hmm. software, things like that. So the growth that we've seen and the innovation that we've seen thus far has been through third-party integrations mm-hmm. to help make that, you know, that tool a bit stickier. But it's still, you know, it's still an ever-changing landscape.
Absolutely. interesting, you know, but it's interesting how the disruption is happening at all levels, right? So that's very, very interesting. I'm interested in your personal experience now and your personal journey, right? I'd like to make that transition now. So how has your personal approach to all of these trends and digital transformation evolved over the years?
I mean, yeah. Well, I think we've all heard the old adage, you change or die. And I don't want to die right now, like at least in terms of my career.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to is from a company called Wondery, and they have a podcast called Business Wars. And the first one I listened to was Blockbuster versus Netflix. So you could probably see how this is going to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, ironically enough, Blockbuster had an opportunity to buy Netflix early in Netflix.
Isn't that crazy?
And chose not to. Uh-huh. Right? They chose to continue their route of brick and mortar. And we all see how that kind of worked out for them. So, you know, Polaroid, I think with, you know, the camera would be another great example.
Although now they kind of like resurface, right?
They found a way of upgrading. But early on, and you know, the DSLR revolution in terms of digital camera, Polaroid kind of took they drew the line in the sand and said, we're not going to cross that right now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we can look at companies like that and see that change oftentimes is necessary. Like we all have to make changes, whether that's in our business or our daily routines or our lives, because it's, you know, the world around us. And so for me, I would consider myself a learner. You know, I like to read. I don't read fiction books because to me they're worthless, and that may be a bit short-sighted, but I like to read very, you know, very practical books.
Yeah. A lot of people will disagree with you on that, Matt.
Yeah, and that's okay, right? That's what makes this world a beautiful place. We all have different opinions. And so I would say that, like I read a book, this is so funny. I read a book several years ago called Hacking Growth. And then right after that, I read another book called Growth Hacking. And then I was talking to a guy that I worked with, and we were talking about these books that we were both reading. And he was like, it's crazy how similar, but how different they are. And I was like, well, I'm going to write a book called Growth Hacking Growth. Try to combine these. So I say that to say, like, I feel like it's important as leaders in business to be able to continue to educate yourself on not just the market that you're in, right? Because that's a microcosm of a much larger environment. Mm-hmm. So what's being done in companies like Uber or Airbnb or Nike could be applied to the businesses in our verticals as well.
Yeah.
So don't just be short-sighted and focus on, you know, your specific vertical.
Let me interrupt you just there, because you just reminded me that we used to do, when I was more on the advertising side of my career, right, of my professional development, we used to run brand development workshops, right? So we would work with a company like Mars, and we would look at, okay, there's this category there's an opportunity. We identify an opportunity of a segment that it's not being addressed, or we don't have a product to address it with, and let's figure out some ideas. And we used to run these workshops where we would bring people from a totally different industry, but that have transformed that industry through some innovation, to come and talk about to come and talk about what they've done in that industry. And then we would run a workshop that would try to force us think like that industry, but for the industry that we're focusing on, right? So kind of like forcing some fresh of set eyes, looking at it with rules that are not the actual rules of our industry, to see if something came out that was different, right? And they were so interesting and so successful, in the sense that it would really help us generate things that normally we would not think about, because kind of like when we're getting into solving a problem, we bring with it a lot of assumptions about how things should run in a certain vertical, in a certain industry, in a certain company, right? And suddenly when you are forced to think through a different lens, that opens up so many different opportunities, right? I think in a way, what you're saying resonates with me that way, in the sense of, why not look at what's happening in a different industry, maybe in a totally different environment, maybe coming at it from a totally different function.
Sure.
And see if I would apply some of those lenses to what I'm currently doing, would I do things differently?
Yeah. I think that's good leadership. I had a client about a year and a half ago that came to me, and this is a CEO that I've respected for a long time. And I've consulted for him at multiple companies that he's led. And he came to me about a year and a half ago and said, "Matt, we have a problem. And that problem is we have a lot of really smart people on our leadership team, and they do what they do very well. And they know the competition, but they've been so focused on this business for the last 10 plus years that they've almost got blinders on. So can you help us see the competition in a different light? Mm-hmm. Can you help us understand what they're doing now that they weren't doing 2 or 3 years ago that we don't even know about yet?" And so I say that to say, I think it's very valuable to have an outsider perspective on things, because there are no biases when you have an outsider.
Yeah.
Right. Whether that's someone who knows the industry or not, it can, it can allow you to be presented with some blue ocean ideas to explore. That you may not have thought about previously. I think that's a very valid point.
Yeah. You have to just do it in a way that it's, in my experience, you just have to make sure that you're running it in a way that you're allowing for those ideas to flourish and actually being explored, right? So
that's right.
You have to facilitate that process, because it's very easy to crush anything that is outside of your experience, right? So, we don't do things that way, right? So you have to facilitate it in a way where you allow for those ideas to be able to be discussed and thoroughly explored and not killed. And it's okay if it's going to take you nowhere. That's okay.
Right.
We're still going to learn from the process, right?
That's it.
Still going to get some insights out of that. So
that's it. Yeah. I think that's on leadership, honestly. Like,
absolutely.
What is the culture of the business? What are the expectations of the employees and leadership? In my experience, the leaders that have been closed off to new ideas are the ones that don't culturally don't look at the value that their employees can bring and the ideas that their employees can bring.
Absolutely.
And so I think it's a culture shift, in the workplace and in the companies that we're talking about specifically, to be able to have the leaders that do recognize that not every idea is going to be a $10 million idea. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've got a few $1 million ideas and you got a $10 million idea, right? But let's prioritize those. Let's work through those. Let's flush through them. Let's research them. Let's, do some analysis and some assessments. And let's figure out how we need to prioritize these. What's our wildly important goal going to be for the next year? And let's all rally around.
Absolutely. So let's shift to future. Tell me one future trend you're most excited about.
Probably AI.
AI?
And I'll be the first one to say that I know about 0.001% of what AI can do. I've started dabbling in it, and it's really
like everybody exciting. Else, by the way. There's no, I mean, it's a blue ocean right now. There's no expert.
Yeah, that's right. I had a guy yesterday I was talking to, he was like, "Man, are you playing the ChatGPT?" And I was like, I went to the website once. And that was I didn't even sign up to get a login to play around on the sandbox. But there are others that I've kind of looked at. I think a lot of it's just, data sets and language models, really. I was playing around with a solution called Bible AI a couple of weeks ago. And I was just asking a very random question, and it was surprisingly accurate with the responses that it gave. And I think like that kind of stuff is going to, it's going to radically change the way that I think productivity.
Oh yeah.
You know, so instead of, you know, going to Google and researching 10 different companies for a competitive analysis and determine SWOT analysis for, you know, 10 different companies, AI is going to be able to allow us to accomplish that in far fewer hours than what we would traditionally.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, I think beyond that, you know, being able to look at how, like ChatGPT, I do know this, they have an API that allows, kind of for, you know, seamless integration into, proprietary software tools. So how do we leverage tools like ChatGPT to be able to accomplish automation, you know, in different processes?
Yeah.
Like the one that I was telling you about earlier with the, kind of the automated note-taking, tool that we're building for the healthcare space.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that probably has me the most excited. Secondarily, I would say that, you know, I think further disruption and refinement around single ecosystems, for various software applications and products and services and solutions probably has me excited as well, because I think there's a lot of ground to gain there. And I look at it through the lens of customer retention and stickiness and, kind of the antithesis of customer, churn. And, I mean, look, as someone who looks at retention and attrition, usually on a daily basis, you know, I think that had me really, really excited. Just because we know that the more product solutions companies use it with a single vendor, the less likely they are to churn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is there an opportunity or challenge that mission-driven organizations should prepare for?
Is there a challenge that
or yeah, or an opportunity that mission-driven organizations should prepare for?
Oh man, I mean,
coming.
God. I think that they just need to be smart in how they approach AI.
Mm-hmm.
Not rely on it 100%, but allow it to kind of supplement what they do. I think that would be one. The other, and I've said this for years, and I don't think it's changed, is be proactive and meet your customers where they are. Don't let your customer come to you with a problem. Define the problem. Let them, because oftentimes when you define a problem, your customers don't even realize it's a problem until you define it.
Yeah.
And so when you define the problem and clearly communicate that, and then they get that message, it's almost like, oh, you know what? We actually do deal with that. Like that is a headwind or a challenge that we face on a daily basis. We may not have seen it just yet, or we may see that it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we can leverage what you offer, this software application or whatever it is that you offer, to be able to mitigate those headwinds to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
So I think defining the problem, oftentimes leads to, you know, early adopters and higher levels of adoption, just because you're being proactive, defining the problem, solving the problem before it even becomes a problem for many organizations.
Of course, of course. All right, so I'm driving towards, conclusion of the podcast. Is there one piece of advice you would give for someone starting in the mission-driven sector, or wanting to start in the mission-driven sector?
God, I think throughout my career, I've seen so many people and so many companies, whether that's, you know, enterprise-level organizations or solopreneurs that have an idea. I've seen so many people waste time and money just kind of on this hamster wheel, spinning around and around. I feel like they know what they want to accomplish. They just don't know the steps to take to get to that point where they realize their goals. So I think that's it. And this is what we preach every day at Hopeware, is flush the ideas out. Don't just run with an idea. It's okay to fail. It's okay to have an idea disproven. It's okay to have a hypothesis that doesn't come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to have a thesis that doesn't materialize. Like, that's okay, right? We learn from that. We learn from those instances. But I think that it's vitally important for whether it's a solopreneur or an enterprise level organization or anybody in between to really focus on the why and define the why and learn as much about the why as possible, right? And I used to have a leader at a private organization, and he would always challenge us to ask why to the void. And at first I was like, what is this joker talking about? I had no idea what he was talking about. And then as I sat through some meetings and, you know, it became more clear and apparent that when you cannot ask yourself why anymore, you have a really good answer. And so that's what we do. That's what Hopeware does, right? Our goal, yeah, we're a product lab. Yeah, we build things. But our goal is not necessarily to like say, yes, you need to build something. I'll never tell a client they need to build something. Right? I want to, like, I used this analogy the other day. I feel like so many people that we talk to are wandering in the desert. They're looking for the promised land. They're looking for this oasis in the desert. And when you paint a picture of the oasis and you say, yes, this is a phenomenal idea, they still don't know where the oasis is. They haven't find it, right? Well, we can lead them to that oasis. We can lead them to the promised land, but it's their job to make the decision to go into the promise, right? To drink the water out of that oasis. So it's not my role or my job to convince someone to build a product or a solution. I'll do all the research. Hopeware will do all the research and all the assessments and look at product market fit and look at the market overall and look at competitors and look at differentiators. And if there's enough meat on the bone there, where the solopreneur or the enterprise or the organization decides to take that leap, and they know that we're here to help them, right? But at least we've given them, you know, 60 or 70 pages or whatever in a deck with supporting documentation to know that their idea has been validated or that their hypothesis has been disproven and they need to think about things in a different way. So I think that's the thing that I've seen so many people just miss on throughout my career is having an idea and just running with the idea. Because when you don't have a clear roadmap and you don't know, you know, when to turn right or when to turn left or when to keep going straight, that's when options happen. And that's when paralysis by analysis happens.
When you have and you're throwing money at the idea without having a plan.
That's right. And so I like what you said earlier about taking 5% of your budget and just flushing this out on the front end, right? Let's have a very clear picture of what reality is now and what reality is going to be. So, you know, I mean, it's like if you watch Bob Ross, you know, 20 or 30 years ago on TV, on PBS on Saturday mornings, the guy would put, you know, start with a blank canvas and paint a picture in 30 minutes. And he made it look so easy. But as a, you know, 15-year-old kid, if I tried to do that, I wouldn't know where to start. I would have paint on a board and I would have a paintbrush and I would be throwing stuff up on a canvas because that, you know, that's, I'm just not a painter, right? A lot of people that have ideas don't look at it through a strategic lens. They're, you know, they may be developers and they can build a great product that works, but how do you know that it fits them? You know, what your target customer needs.
And that there is a market for it. I'll never forget, we did this, the blueprint for a client, right? They were trying to build an e-commerce solution for one of the products, right? And so we did all of this analysis and we found out that after our analysis, we didn't feel there was a market for it or it was too expensive, you know, for them to actually make money out of it. So we basically created a conclusion that took us out of building the project for them, right? I mean, we got paid for that blueprint, but we were saying, we're not recommending you to actually go forward with this, right?
Right.
And I recall after delivering the analysis, I recall the CEO saying, this is one of the best investments we've done. Because it has saved me so much money just by looking at it this way and realizing, okay, this is not a viable option. We told them, if you want to build it, you have to build it this other way. You have to go through retail. E-commerce is not going to be the right way of you making money out of this. And I felt really good. Even the business-wise, we did not continue with that client. Probably we earned a lot of referrals from that client because we were just being... Exactly.
So who are they going to come back to when they have another idea that they need to flesh out, right? They're going to come back to you.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a great piece of feedback. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for your time. It's been really enjoyable and it's been very refreshing because you are my first guest with expertise in the not-for-profit and mission-driven organization. So it's been very refreshing for me as a conversation. I hope it's been the same for our audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hope so as well. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone listening. Make sure that you're following us and clicking like on the episode so more people can learn about our conversations. See you in our next episode. Bye-bye.